Welcome in, everyone, to the Sports Rush. I am Justin Kenny in for Brett Rump. Caleb Hatch is here, though. We're talking area sports, regional sports here till 6 o'clock. Justin Cohn will join us at about 5:20. We'll talk some Comet hockey, see where the K's are at, see what transactions happen today, because it seems like a daily occurrence that the K's have people coming and going. We'll get all the happenings about the K's with Cohn at about 5:20. We did give away some Shrine Circus tickets during the top of the hour break. Eric, congratulations. You're the winner of the four-pack of tickets to the Mizpah Shrine Circus for the January 28th, 29th, and 30th. We will be giving away, the rest of the week, right?
Yeah, four-pack tomorrow and Friday as well.
How about that? Love the circus, don't like the clowns. We already reviewed that in the first hour. Both Caleb and I are on the same page on that one. First hour, we talked about Matt Eberflus getting a second interview with the Chicago Bears for their vacant head coaching position. Of course, Eberflus, the current Indianapolis Colts defensive coordinator, is the first to get a second interview with the Bears. Doesn't mean he's the leader by any means, but he is the first to get a second interview. So if you're a Colts fan, 46862, let us know on the text line. Matt Eberflus, if he leaves for Chicago, if he leaves from maybe Jacksonville, what does that mean for the Colts defense, if anything?
Colts fans are celebrating, and you know the Colts could change their defensive philosophy away from what, the cover two? And that could be an option.
You don't like the cover two, huh?
I just think while they have players who create a lot of takeaways, I mean, as far as yards allowed, they're middle of the pack.
Right. I mean, that's the thing with the cover two is you're giving up yardage, but you're also going to get a lot of takeaways. So it's kind of a give and take. I would think with the edge rushers that the Colts can put on the field, they would be a little bit more aggressive instead of that more coverage. But, you know, who am I?
Well, assuming those edge guys pan out, I mean, Quiddy Pay had a couple of plays late in the season. I mean, he was a rookie last year. If he can take that next step in year two, I think they'll have a lot more reason to be confident that they can keep a system like that and be more aggressive rushing the quarterback.
Yeah, absolutely. So let us know, 46862, what do you think? We also talked Carson Wentz. What do the Colts, can they do anything with Carson Wentz? Is there anything better out there? And is there a team out there they could somehow dupe to take Carson Wentz? I find it hard to believe they could, but you know, the Raiders are a prime candidate, although they're hiring a new GM. Mike Mayock got relieved of his duties in Las Vegas. So the Raiders, you know, whether they promote from within or hire from the outside, they're looking for a GM. So, you know, if they bring somebody in, would they want to make a big splash? I don't necessarily think trading for Carson Wentz is a big splash unless you're going for a negative thing, but that's me. But elsewhere in the NFL, it's divisional playoff weekend coming up. Two games Saturday, two games Sunday. Caleb, how did you like the Monday Night Football playoff game?
I like the idea of it. The actual game, I kind of stopped paying attention to late in the first half and just was doing other things on my laptop with the TV on in the background.
Unfortunately, the first game of the weekend ended up being the best game.
Yeah.
With the Bengals and Raiders.
I would agree.
And then, you know, you start off the weekend great. You know, six games, first game was amazing, and it was just a stinker after that. I mean, I guess you could say 49ers-Cowboys with
that
the drama at the end.
That got close at the end.
I don't think it was as close as the final score indicated.
No, I don't think so either.
But, you know, Bills blow out the Patriots, although I think a certain amount of the fan base in the NFL enjoyed watching that thumping of the Pats. You know, Tampa Bay makes easy work of the Eagles. Kansas City makes easy work of Pittsburgh, and the Rams did the same thing Monday night against the Cardinals. We've mentioned this, at least previewed it, and talked about bad quarterbacking in the NFL. And we talk about Carson Wentz because the Colts fans, you know, that's the only thing they can compare to. But let's talk about two teams in the NFL that have a lot of questions going into the offseason after what they saw from their quarterbacks in the playoffs. And that's Jalen Hurts with the Eagles and Kyler Murray with the Cardinals. Kyler Murray, the first portion of the year, was MVP candidate. He's the best quarterback in the NFC, at least dual threat guy. He's blowing up. He's going to take the Cardinals into Super Bowl contention. Cardinals take a nosedive late in the year. Kyler Murray looks absolutely terrible against the Rams on Monday night. And now there's open questions on if Kyler Murray long-term is the guy. I mean, they're not going to replace him, but from the beginning of the season to now, man, it's been a 180 with Kyler Murray. And then earlier in the weekend, you talk Sunday, the first game on Sunday, and Jalen Hurts lays an egg against Tampa Bay. And I think now you're looking at Philly going, is Hurts long-term answer? So this is similar to what we talk about with the Colts fans. Look, this is reality in the NFL. The majority of the teams are stuck with quarterbacks that are not good enough to win a Super Bowl with. And you just happen to have Peyton Manning and Andrew Luck for a long time. For the better part of what, 20 years?
Yeah, and someone texted in on the Parkview Sports Medicine text line, Arch Manning should be available next year. Not quite.
No, he's got a couple years away from Arch.
You know, the Eagles GM, Howie Roseman, gave the vote of confidence to Jalen Hurts. He says they plan to go in the offseason with Hurts as the starting quarterback here in 2022 for the season in the fall.
Here's the problem. If you're Philly, if this is Philly sports radio right now, they're talking about how they get a better quarterback than Jalen Hurts, okay? That's exactly what's going on in Philly right now. Probably not as much in Arizona because Kyler Murray, I still feel, is going to be a very successful quarterback.
Yeah, I think with Kyler Murray, it's a couple things. One, the Cardinals as a team just kind of collapsed down the stretch. They were, I'll admit this, I picked Bills Cardinals in the Super Bowl in the preseason. And the Cardinals were great the first half of the year.
Yeah, they were. It looked like a great bet.
And the Bills were not great.
And now look at the Bills.
And now they're the team we expected them to be at the start of the season.
I mean, they're going to be a trendy pick coming up this weekend to go into KC and get a dub.
And with the Cardinals, I think it's more, you look at Cliff Kingsbury, great offensive mind, but his teams, whether at Texas Tech or at Arizona, they've all faded down the stretch of regular seasons. And Kyler Murray, yes, he was without DeAndre Hopkins, but that was known, and that had been known for several weeks. So, you know, for them to go from being one of the top teams in the NFL for the first half of the season and then not even win their division and then lose in a road playoff game in the wild card round against a divisional opponent in the Rams, I mean, that's a massive disappointment.
Right. I mean, you just look at the wild card games last weekend, and we're talking about Carson Wentz and saying the Colts are not in a position right now to win a Super Bowl because they're not good enough a quarterback. And the Colts didn't make the playoffs. But let's go through the teams that lost last week that made the playoffs and see what their quarterback situation is. The Raiders. We already talked about that in the first hour. Could the Raiders move on from Derek Carr? And the Colts fans are like, hey, Derek Carr could potentially be an upgrade. Caleb, you said the same thing. Maybe, maybe not. But if he's not good enough for Vegas, then what makes him good enough in Indy? Because the very same thing was said about Carson Wentz in Philly.
I think Carr has better weapons around him than Carson Wentz.
I would agree.
Does.
That's why I'm saying, like, is it Carson Wentz or is it the supporting cast? You got to give him more weapons.
I think it's a little bit of both, but I do think it is more so Carson Wentz just because of, you know, his knack for somehow making inexplicable decisions in critical moments.
Yeah. I mean, that's the big thing is you can't make the mistakes. You know, and I feel like, yeah, while your running game was really good and Jonathan Taylor was great and blah, 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 it is 2022, and how you win consistently in the NFL is you pass the football. And if you can't do that effectively, then you're not going to make it deep in the playoffs. So if we continue through the wild card round, we talked about the Raiders, they lose. Patriots, Mac Jones, they feel like he's the future. Still getting used to it. So Patriots feel like they're in a good spot.
Yeah, I don't think you make any changes there.
Eagles, we talked about Jalen Hurts. He's had a little bit longer to show his hand, so to speak. So where does Philly go?
I mean, it's one thing for the GM to say that he expects Hurts to be the starter. And, you know, Sirianni, I think that's kind of his guy.
Yeah.
But you know how fast they can, you know, change courses there with that franchise.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you look at the Cowboys losing, they have Dak, although he wasn't great on Sunday. The Steelers, Big Ben's done.
Yeah, and what do you do? You know, I don't think the answer is Mason Rudolph, right?
Right. Yeah, no, I don't think so. So you look at the Steelers, where do they go? You look at Monday night, we talked about Kyler Murray. Even the winning teams, like look at the 49ers, they have a decision to make with Jimmy G and Trey Lance sitting there in the wings. I mean, Jimmy G hadn't been great, but they're in the divisional round of the playoffs. Do you just say goodbye to a quarterback like that?
This seems like, you know, a 2.0 of Kansas City Chiefs having Alex Smith and Patrick Mahomes a few years ago. And at the time, you could make the argument, why would you get rid of Alex Smith? He's a winner. He's won playoff games for you. He's a solid quarterback.
Right.
He's a team guy. Patrick Mahomes comes in and just completely blows the doors off the rest of the NFL.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I don't know if Trey Lance is at that level yet, but could he be? Maybe. I mean, it's kind of a similar situation where you have a good team, a playoff team, where they have two quarterbacks and they don't know what to do.
I mean, look, if you have two quarterbacks, it's better than not. I mean, you know the old adage, if you have two, you have zero.
Yeah.
No, if you have two, you have two.
In the NFL, okay? it's a little different because that means one guy is a starting caliber quarterback and the other is also of that level. And it's a matter of you're not going to keep both long term. So hopefully one guy will beat out the other guy just on practice and camps and everything, play on the field to determine the best route.
So what is this all about? We're talking about quarterbacks in the NFL with wildcard. Look, you are not alone, Colts fans, okay? You had it so good for the better part of 20 years. Is welcome to the NFL. Welcome to reality where the majority of the teams in the league do not have a quarterback capable of taking their teams to the Super Bowl. And depends on the surrounding cast that you put around them. I mean, look at the 49ers, for example. I mean, I wouldn't say Jimmy G is a quarterback that can take a team to a Super Bowl, yet they're in the divisional round. You know, the reward, of course, is having to go to Lambeau on Saturday. But still, let's look at the divisional teams in the playoffs this weekend. We start with Bengals Titans. Joe Burrow, looking good for Cincinnati,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, looking really good. Yeah. I mean, one of the three probably great young quarterbacks in the league. You have Burrow, you have Justin Herbert, and then I guess you can throw in Patrick Mahomes, even though he has a couple more seasons.
Yeah. Ryan Tannehill for the Titans. I mean, you have to give him credit because when you lose Derrick Henry, you feel like they're, you know, it's similar to the Colts is they did not have that weapon offensively. If you take Jonathan Taylor out of that offense and you tell Carson Wentz that he has to win games, I don't know how that goes.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to be winning many games.
No.
And with the Titans, you know, we're completely writing them off, right? Because they didn't have Derrick Henry for basically half the regular season. And you add him back into the lineup and we saw what Cam Akers did on Monday night for the Rams coming off an injury and how effective he was. I mean, he looked like he hadn't missed a game.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And Derrick Henry, I mean, everyone's going to argue Derrick Henry, Jonathan Taylor, 1A, 1B as far as best running backs in the NFL. I don't think that's really even a debate right now. So the Titans are a team that's going to be a dark horse as the one seed in the AFC, which
yeah,
is wild.
Because, you know, and now Derrick Henry, there's, you know, hitting around. I don't know. Maybe you could come back. But 49ers, Packers, that's a late game on Saturday. Aaron Rodgers, you know, move on. Is this the final year of him in Green Bay? Who knows? I'm already sick of the story, and it hasn't even really started yet for the offseason. But
it's starting because we're preparing ourselves mentally for another offseason of this. I think Rodgers stays, though. I really do. They got him Randall Cobb. He has solid lineup. I think to me, it's more so the Packers have the most pressure to advance, right? I mean, they gave Aaron Rodgers the piece he wanted, and how many more chances are the Packers and Aaron Rodgers going to get, you know, working together? Because it doesn't seem like there are that many left. This could be the last run for them.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about a quarterback that elevates his team. That's Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers more than and I'll throw Patrick Mahomes in there. But Patrick Mahomes has a lot of weapons. I don't think we've seen Patrick Mahomes have the lack of weaponry that Aaron Rodgers has had on occasion and Tom Brady has had on occasion, at least in proven NFL playmakers. Sunday schedule, you look at the Rams and Buccaneers, and you look at Matt Stafford, you look at Tom Brady, nothing to see there. And then you look at Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes on Sunday. So when you look at these eight teams and you say, okay, I feel like at least minimum five of those teams have quarterbacks that I feel can win a Super Bowl with their teams. You look at Rodgers, Stafford, Brady, Allen, Mahomes.
I don't know if I'm as sold on Stafford yet. I'm just going to be honest. Like, really? I think the cast around him is great, but Stafford just won his first ever playoff game.
Well, I know, but he was playing for the Lions.
I know. I get that. But, I mean, they kind of underachieved most of the season anyway. And
they were the team, again, that came out like gangbusters, then kind of struggled, but, you know, righted the ship at the right time. But, you know, Matt Stafford, I feel, you know, when you look at his yardage, close to 5,000 yards in the season, 41 touchdowns, 17 interceptions, maybe a touch too many in terms of the picks, but, you know, he's got a lot of weapons around him. That surely helps.
Also, the Rams beat the Bucs in the regular season. I don't know if they're going to pull that off again in the postseason.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't see it happening. But, you know, crazier things, for sure. I'll be one that's rooting for the Buffalo Bills, though, because, you know, I placed a preseason bet on them winning the Super Bowl. So, a little sketchy midseason. But, you know, they looked really good against New England last week. But, you know, Carson Wentz, you go back to that conversation and what you do, and, you know, I feel like the Colts are stuck. I think they're just going to have to eat it, and either you eat the money and get rid of him, or you try to surround Carson Wentz with as much as possible around him, and I think that's what the Colts are going to have to do. They don't have the available capital to trade. They don't have the available players to trade. I mean, do you want to trade a defensive starter in a package to get rid of Carson Wentz for what?
I don't think so. I mean, the other thing is just contracts coming up, you know, in the future. Quentin Nelson's going to have to get paid as well.
Yeah.
So that kind of limits what you can do. But ultimately, I think the Colts have to make some sort of move at quarterback. I don't think they have a choice. I think what happened against Jacksonville a couple weeks ago backed the Colts into a corner, and I don't think Ursay is going to accept, you know, no change there either.
Is the move for the Colts to bring in a capable backup quarterback to have an option if Carson Wentz doesn't work out? Because I don't think you're going to be able to go out and get a starter.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the list, and I guess the guys who are backup worthy that you could get, you know, Marcus Mariota, Tyrod Taylor. You're not going to get Jacoby Brissett, Mitch Trubisky. I mean, I guess Ryan Fitzpatrick, but I don't think they're going to pay the money for him.
Right.
I think that'd be out of the price range for what the Colts want to do. But I guess those are the guys that are options.
I feel like I looked at Andy Dalton. I know the, you know, Bears expectations are low, but I thought he did pretty good job for the Bears considering the situation they were in. I think a quarterback like that makes a lot of sense behind Carson Wentz, and maybe it's a veteran like that that can really help him out. I don't know, but I don't think the Colts are going to be able to go out and get a QB1. At this point, I don't think so. We're going to take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk to Justin Cohn of the Journal Gazette when we return, talking Comet Hockey. You are listening to The Sports Rush here on 1380 The Fan, 100.9 FM. Welcome back to The Sports Rush here on a Wednesday. I'm Justin Kenny in for Brett Rump. Caleb Hatch producing. And we were just looking at the Comet schedule coming up. And, well, we mentioned the circus, and I guess they're going to be out of town for the circus because it's a home game this weekend, and then it's going to be a couple weeks till the K's are back at home. Let's talk all things Comets with Justin Cohn of the Journal Gazette, who joins us right now. Justin, what's up?
How's it going, guys?
Hey, we're doing great here. And before we kind of delve into Comets, I with all the transactions, like, what, take us through a Justin Cohn day where he feels I am on it for the transactions. What do you do?
I mean, it's sort of unbelievable because it's not really a streamlined system at this level. So I am periodically checking the American Hockey League transaction report. And then, of course, the ECHL puts out a report every day. But that tends to be a little unreliable because it can be behind the times or not feature some transactions. So there's just a lot of texting to people who I trust will give me, you know, solid information. And then you got to check a lot of team sites. And of course you miss some along the way, but you know, really the best source I have for transactions is from people within the teams or even the players themselves, just kind of giving me a heads up. This guy's going this direction or keep an eye out for this, but it's tough at this level. You have to just be kind of watching and talking to people all the time. And really, it shouldn't be this way. I mean, hopefully it would be streamlined better, but that's the pandemic for you.
In terms of recent moves with the K's, kind of where do we stand since the weekend?
Well, the big question right now is goaltending, because they only have one goalie right now, Mario Colina. They released Liam Hughes under some circumstances that we really don't have a full public story on. So, you know, that's the big question right now, is who's going to be the second goalie, when they return to play on Saturday. I'm reading between the lines of some transactions that maybe there's a possibility a guy comes down from Henderson of the AHL, or they're just going to have to go find probably another rookie goalie. But I know they were scouring for somebody a couple days ago. And other than that, right now the roster is basically the same as it was the other day, except they added defenseman Connor Corcoran, who came back from Henderson.
In terms of goaltending, a couple of cool stories in the last day or so. First, Michael Hauser, former Comet goalie, he gets the dub for Buffalo over Ottawa.
Yeah, I mean, he showed that he was capable of doing some things last year when Buffalo was extremely shorthanded, and he played, I think it was four games. Buffalo kind of in a similar situation right now, that they were, again, really shorthanded from myriad factors. So, yeah, I mean, you know, he's always been a very good, consistent goalie who's able to, you know, kind of jump from ECHL to AHL and now NHL and do some things.
And Pat Nagel, big news for him as well.
Yeah, you know, again, and both those guys, you know, just a great example of guys getting opportunities that they probably would not, if we weren't in this pandemic. So, you know, Pat Nagel, I think, is kind of an interesting story for a lot of reasons. You know, the biggest being that, you know, he had never played for a national team. It wasn't something that he kind of went out and sought. And just through the national team scouting, they just kind of, you know, honed in on him as being a possible guy. And they started looking at film and started talking to the Philadelphia Flyers, because he's in their system, and would they be willing to part with him for about a month? And it just came together. So, you know, he's 34. I don't think he thought that something like this was going to be possible at this juncture of his career. And, you know, it's a great opportunity for him. We don't know what the depth chart is going to be. I'm looking at it kind of guessing that he's going to be the number two. But, you know, just a great story and a great opportunity for a guy who, you know, was just sitting there and just gets the call.
Sticking with the Olympics here real quick, Coney, it's a couple weeks till we kick it off in Beijing, and we know no NHL players will be competing on the ice. In terms of the U.S.'s chances, you know, everybody says, well, you know, these other countries, you know, I guess it'll be Russia or the Russian Federation, whatever it is. But, yeah, they got the KHL, and these other countries have leagues. But in terms of the chances for the U.S., is that a detriment considering that, or do you feel like the depth of talent in this country is deep enough where the U.S. has a shot?
I would put it this way. I mean, certainly when there were NHL players involved, you probably honed in on three, maybe four teams, and now I do think it's a lot more wide open. I mean, you got to keep in mind, with some of the European teams as an example, their players play together a little more often in these national teams, so they're going to have a more cohesive unit. You know, you mentioned Russia. You know, a lot of those guys will be coming from the KHL, so, you know, there's going to be a lot of talent and a little familiarity there. And, you know, people forget that the runner-up the last Olympics was actually Germany. So I do think it's wide open. You know, is it a detriment? Yeah, I think it kind of is. I mean, a lot of these guys have not played together. There's not going to be the talent level that we expected. But, you know, these guys are, for the most part, going to be professionals. You know, it's not like back in the day when you were going purely from the college ranks. You know, these guys are going to be pros, a lot of them, and there's going to be a lot of experience. So, you know, I still think the U.S. has got a chance to medal. But, you know, it's going to be so wide open that I think it's almost really hard to guess.
Justin Cohn joining us on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline. Justin, are all systems go for the Olympics in Beijing? It seems rather quiet, considering with the Omicron going around the globe, and does not seem to be a lot of chatter about the status coming up here in a few weeks.
Yeah, Yeah, well, I mean, as far as I can tell, it is. I mean, we know that, you know, the spectators are going to be limited, but, you know, the couple people kind of affiliated with Olympics from various realms, I mean, they're all excited. They're all systems go. You know, I do know they're being told to be a little bit careful about what they say in terms of how safe they feel and what the protocols are going over there and things like that. So, you know, I don't think you go over there without concerns, but, you know, of course, this was many years ago. I used to work and cover some Olympics, and, you know, I could tell you there are just so many rules and protocols in place that I have to believe it's ultimately, you know, pretty safe in terms of, you know, where you're going to be able to go and what you can do and who you can be around. But, you know, you're right. Omicron, you know, we're seeing it now in sports, even here. I mean, you know, just one or two people get it and it can kind of spread like wildfire. So, you know, I think you're on to something. Like, it does seem a little quieter than usual, but I have no reason to believe it's not going to happen and that, you know, they're not going to be prepared for the situation as it is.
Coney, when we look at where the Comets are right now, sitting third in the Central, and, you know, people would say, oh, they're only 6 points behind Toledo in first, but they're only, you know, 5 points out of fifth with Wheeling. So in what direction do the Comets go? Because, you know, they're not going to be home at the Coliseum for, you know, better part of 2+ weeks. And how does that road trip look for them after they leave the Coliseum on Saturday?
Well, you know, they haven't been trending in the best direction. That's true, but in terms of a win loss record, but there have been some really good signs. I mean, they won the last game, even though they lost at Toledo. I thought they were by far the better team. You know, they had some kooky things happen in the last week or two that led to some losses. So, you know, what I'm saying is, yeah, they're in third place, but I just don't think they're a typical third place team. You know, even the roster as they have it now, when all those guys are healthy, like when you have Sean Sedlovsky as an example, when he's not sitting out from some minor injuries, I still think there's a lot to build on and a lot to be optimistic about, but they really have to solve the goaltending situation. I mean, it just has to happen somehow. And, you know, it's just not something they could have prepared for any better. I mean, they came into the season with three top tier goalies, and, you know, one of them just wasn't patient enough and opted out, you know, wanted to go to another team, and that really dealt them a blow. But I actually have a lot of faith in their ability to find goalies. If you look at some of these guys over the last few years, like Daniel Harvey or Robbie Badoon, I mean, these were guys that the Comets identified themselves and found as quality goalies coming out of juniors or college. So I've been critical of some of the recruiting, but not the goaltender recruiting. And so I think they'll solve it, and they just have to, you know, get a little bit of stability back there. And then I think they'll be a factor, you know, the rest of the season.
Coney, final question for you. And with me doing color commentary for Purdue Fort Wayne games, I've been able to see immediately after some of these games, when the K's have a night game or something coming up, just how quick they are able to get the floor up or put it down, depending on what direction they're going. You've been familiar with both the Mad Ants and the Comets. You know, when they have to put down that floor quickly, or when they have to, you know, pick up the floor quickly, do the basketball players or hockey players, do they notice it? Does it change the, you know, the court or the playing surface any if they have to hurry up and change it?
Well, starting with basketball, and I don't think this really necessarily has anything to do with quick changeovers, but there are some moments where you see concerns about, you know, maybe condensation on the floor, things like that. But they've really been few and far between in the many years I've covered those teams. And, you know, something to keep in mind is they've been doing this type of stuff in Fort Wayne forever. So I worry about it less than at other buildings. So hockey, you know, there's been a couple times this season where they've had the quick changeover, where they've had basketball in the afternoon and then hockey at night. And sometimes you can see the effect of it on the ice surface. And what I mean is you can see the puck hopping around a little bit more than you're comfortable with. You know, just doing some things where you can tell that the ice is just not optimal condition, but it's still way better than I would say 80% of the other ECHL teams. So it's just one of those things that you just kind of have to deal with this at this level. And a lot of teams do. And more than anything, it's a badge of honor that you've got a pretty good sports market and a building that's able to change that over as quickly as it can, because there are a lot of buildings that aren't able to deal with that.
What's the worst playing surface in the ECHL?
Ooh, boy, I'd really have to think about that one.
What are the candidates, at least?
Well, I can tell you in the division, in terms of the ice surfaces and how the ice does, it's really pretty good. I mean, people rave about Toledo. But, you know, there are some bad ones. You get into some of those warmer weather territories, East Coast or even the South, and you know you could be in for some rough conditions. But aside from ice, there are other things you have to worry about, which is the way the puck bounces off the boards. So we saw the Comets lose a game because of that last week in Kalamazoo. And Wheeling is also known for having just some crazy hops off the board. So I think you almost are more concerned about things like that than just how the ice itself is skating. But, you know, you just never know. It's one of those things with hockey. You can walk into any building on any night and something could have caused the problem. Indianapolis is one that I am not a big fan of because they do fireworks right before the game. And you can see it affects the ice surface for probably the first 8 minutes of the period. And of course it's right in front of the visiting team's goal. So, you know, every building has its eccentricities. That's for sure.
The greatest part of the Winter Classic on New Year's Day up in Minnesota was the fact that they had to heat the ice to make sure it was warm enough, not cold enough, but warm enough to play on. Have you ever covered a game in which they had to heat the ice to make sure it was a playable surface?
I don't know that I've ever seen that, but I can give you a real quick story. Years ago, I covered a game in Asheville, North Carolina. It was actually the first time the Comets played in the UHL, and they didn't start making the ice until 2 days before the game. And so the day of the game, it still wasn't ready. And so what their solution was, well, let's just crank the temperature lower. And what happens then is the top of the ice freezes and the players can actually just melt through it almost. And that's what happened. Like, they stepped on the ice and it just cracked and they went through. So they had to postpone the games for 2 days. So that's an extreme version of it. But I have seen teams make that mistake where they think the solution is, well, let's just make it colder. Well, that's just not exactly how it works. You have to know how it's doing. So you get a thick sheet bottom to top. And you can tell the cities that have been doing it for 40, 50, 70 years, they know what they're doing, and the others, not so much.
All right, buddy. Hey, appreciate you coming on, talking Comets and Olympics and playing surfaces. We'll catch up with you.
All right. Thanks, guys.
All right, buddy. That was Justin Cohn of the Journal-Gazette joining us here talking all things Comets. We're going to take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk IU and Purdue, the first matchup of the season coming up between the rivals tomorrow night. We'll talk all about it and more when we come back. Here on the Sports Rush, 1380 The Fan, 100.9 FM. Welcome back to the Sports Rush here on a Wednesday. Justin Kenny, Caleb Hatch here with you. And coming up tomorrow evening, 6 o'clock, it's why we are moving the High School Coaches Show to this evening at 6 o'clock. Tomorrow at 6, it'll be the pregame show, Purdue and Indiana, round one from the Simon Scott Assembly Hall. And, of course, God love them, those IU fans. They feel pretty good about tomorrow. Can they finally end that 9-game losing streak? Of course, Purdue fans want to tell them every reason why it's not going to happen. So we talked in the 4 o'clock hour. You made the point that I was not aware of, that the IU has already surpassed their win total from a year ago. That last year didn't include any wins over Purdue. Could this year include at least a win over the Boilermakers?
It could, but if it's going to happen, it's going to be tomorrow night, because I don't think IU has a prayer at Mackey Arena coming up in February.
Last win for the Indiana Hoosiers over the Purdue Boilermakers, February 20th, 2016. It feels like that's only 6 years ago. It feels like 16 years. Really.
Yogi Ferrell was on that team.
Really?
One of the last great IU teams.
Yeah. Oh, man. What do we look like? What do we look for in this matchup? I mean, is it Trace Jackson Davis? I mean, is it, if he shows up, IU's got a shot. If he doesn't, there's no shot. I mean, I feel like that's Indiana every game.
Yeah. And, you know, depending on his health, you know, he took that tumble against Nebraska in the game on Monday night, did not do much in practice. Woodson expects TJD to be ready Thursday night. So that's, I guess, worth monitoring, but you know, if he's not fully healthy and he's limited by that, I just don't see how IU has a chance, because the front line of Purdue, But IU's front line is pretty good with Trace Jackson Davis and Race Thompson. There's no depth after that where Purdue, you have Edie, you have Williams, you throw in Caleb first. I mean, they have so many pieces inside that if they lose a guy or have a guy not at full strength, they'll make up for it somewhere else.
Something else to keep an eye on, you mentioned this, Caleb, in the show notes, for Indiana's three-point percentage defense, they allow a 29%. Purdue shoots 40%. So what gives? Can IU, you know, if I don't think they can completely shut down that interior game for Purdue, but if they can make things difficult on the outside, it gives them a better shot.
Yeah, that's where Purdue is so tough, because you have Jaden Ivey and Sasha Stefanovic, you know, that can hit from outside, and IU doesn't really have consistent three-point shooters. Parker Stewart, I guess, would be probably the top guy, and then Miller Kopp, throw him in there as well. But they just don't have the perimeter shooting. And like you said, if IU is going to try to take away the inside game of Purdue, which I just don't see how they can do that based on the size advantage Purdue will have inside, then Purdue will torch you from the outside.
This starts a three-game homestand for the Hoosiers. They get Purdue tomorrow night at 7, and then they get Michigan at high noon on Sunday at the Simon Scott Assembly Hall, and that'll be followed by a week from tonight, a visit from Penn State, before the Hoosiers then hit the road, Maryland, and then back at home in Illinois. So this is a stretch for the Hoosiers at home that they have to take advantage of if they want to be a factor in the Big Ten.
Yeah, I mean, you think they have to win two out of these three games. Look, Michigan is a team that has underperformed since the start of the season. I don't think people have any expectations for that program. It is crazy how quickly things have just folded in Ann Arbor under Juwan Howard. I don't think he's going to be fired by any means. I think that's off the table. But you thought with Hunter Dickinson coming back that Michigan would be a contender in the Big Ten, and they've just completely disappeared since, you know, the non-conference. And then you mentioned Penn State. IU disappointing at Penn State earlier in conference play. This is one they have to get. And Purdue, if you can end the streak, I'd say it's gravy, but I don't think it's likely.
Really?
I really don't. I mean, this is their best opportunity in a while, but we thought that last year. We thought that the year before.
Right.
I mean, how many years has it been? Even the game right before the pandemic, when IU hosted Purdue and Bob Knight returned, you know, you thought that would be the game the streak would end. Didn't happen then either.
When you look at the Boilermakers coming off that, it was a double overtime win at Illinois on Monday, a game that kind of got glossed over by many in the country, but Illinois to me is a lot better team than where they're ranked. And I know it's been 3 days and in terms of their college kids and all that, but and it's a rivalry game. I get it. But is there any, carry over from that game, positive or negative, for Purdue?
I mean, for Purdue, I think that helps, you know, your confidence. You win a game on the road against a team that was previously unbeaten in Big Ten play, and you take care of business, a game that you almost gave away a couple of times.
Right.
But, I mean, a huge win for your confidence if you're Purdue, coming off probably not the strongest start and what you'd expect from the Boilers entering Big Ten play. So I just think that only builds your confidence. I don't think it's going to take away. And, you know, you mentioned the double overtime aspect. I mean, it was Monday. If this was, say, a really late game on Tuesday night and then they travel back late,
right,
you know, maybe it could be a little bit of a factor. But these guys are young. They can bounce back pretty quick.
They're young whippersnappers. Two teams in the Big Ten are still undefeated at home this season. Can you name them, Caleb?
IU's one of them.
IU is one of them.
I'm going to guess the other is, oh, man, Wisconsin?
No, it's Ohio State.
Oh.
Wisconsin has a loss at home. Michigan State has a loss at home. Purdue has a loss at home. But IU, the only other undefeated team other than Ohio State at home, and they also have the most home wins, 11-0, but they're 1-4 on the road. So
yeah, and a lot of those wins are part of their weak non-conference schedule. It's ranked 340th in the country.
Weak is
putting it
sugarcoating
nicely.
It, yeah, for sure. And that makes this homestand all the more important for the Hoosiers, because they have not proven that they can win on the road. non-conference or in conference.
Yeah, beating Nebraska.
That doesn't count.
I mean, it counts in the fact that it counts on the road win-loss column,
yeah.
And it helps your team's confidence. But yeah, it's not a key game. I mean, they had their opportunities against Syracuse, you know, non-conference, and then they just completely blew it at Wisconsin. Every year you think, oh, is IU going to end that streak too at the Kohl Center? Doesn't happen.
Yeah. I'm sure it's going to be electric environment at the Assembly Hall tomorrow night. I don't think the Hoosiers have the offensive firepower, quite frankly. I don't think they can play good enough defense to get enough stops. And unless Purdue just comes out and just shoots broke, like they're just trash shooting the ball, I have a tough time seeing Indiana winning this game.
Yeah, I do too. And to me, it's mostly Purdue has so much more depth and so much more size inside. And while IU's strongest aspect is their front court, Purdue's even stronger, you know, with Edie and Williams and First and so on. And IU just doesn't have the bodies to compete. You know, when you have Race Thompson, Trace Jackson Davis, they're really good players, but the drop off is huge when you go to the bench after that.
Look, I very much want to believe in the Indiana Hoosiers. I am Fox Mulder from the X-Files. I want to believe, but I can't, because you look at what the Hoosiers have done, and it's up and down, up and down, up and down, right? I mean, it's the same thing we've seen for several years now, and you look at it, and okay, so you beat Ohio State at home, dominate them, okay? But then you follow that up, or that's the game immediately following a loss on the road to Penn State. It's just very difficult. You know, you beat Minnesota at home, and then you go to a winnable, you know, Hawkeye Arena. Maybe you can pull one on the road, and you don't play well, and you lose by 9.
I will say this. After the Ohio State win, the fact that they beat Minnesota, granted that was at home the following Sunday, that was a step in a direction that I don't think we saw from previous IU teams.
I want to see consistency. And you know what? The Hoosiers could come out tomorrow and win, but I can't be convinced, because, you know, over the past couple of seasons, you've seen IU get some marquee wins here and there, but they cannot follow it up by beating the teams they should. So, you know, could IU come out and knock off Purdue tomorrow? Sure. Could they then come back on Sunday at noon at home against Michigan and lose? Sure. That's the problem. And until we see consistency from the Hoosiers, not just in the big games, but also the lesser games, I think it's always going to be some doubt. You know, look, I want to believe. I'm Fox Mulder with the Indiana Hoosiers. I want to believe, but I can't as of yet. So you can follow all the action, Purdue and the Indiana Hoosiers, tomorrow night, 6 o'clock pregame, 7 o'clock tip from the Simon Scott Assembly Hall. We're going to take our final break of the evening. We'll come back, wrap up the Sports Rush here on 1380 The Fan, 100.9 FM. Welcome back to the Sports Rush here for a final time on a Wednesday. Coming up at the top of the hour, it will be more me, more Justin Kenny, lucky you, with the High School Coaches Show, one day early because we have Purdue and Indiana basketball coming up tomorrow night. Tonight, we'll talk to Bryce Vance, KPC Media Group, as we do each and every week. Also talk to Phil Brackman, head coach of the Concordia Lutheran Cadets, the lone undefeated team left in SAC play on the boys' side. And also talk to Akilah Sims, head girls basketball coach of the Snyder Panthers and former standout player. We'll talk to her about Snyder put up a good fight last Friday night at Homestead, but in the end, the Spartans prevailed, ended a 12-game winning streak for the Panthers. So we'll talk to Coach Sims as well as Coach Brackman and Bryce Vance. Coming up tomorrow, will Brett be back? Who knows? I know Caleb Hatch will be here, so that's all the more reason to listen with Caleb Hatch in the house. Who is here with him? Not sure yet, but we'll probably recap some of the action in college basketball tonight. Also, delve deeper into that IU and Purdue matchup coming up tomorrow night. Thank you to Scott Agnes of the Fieldhouse Files for joining us, and Justin Cohn as well. This has been the Sports Rush, 1380 The Fan, 100.9 FM.
Podcasts by Federated Media.